Wake up, sleepyheads. This is CJSF 90.1 FM.
And you're tuning in to Slumber Party.
This is CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby Community Radio from Simon Fraser University. We broadcast on the stolen ancestral territory of the Kwikwetlem, Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh.
Listen online at cjsf.ca or on our radio app, which you can download from the app or Google Store, depending on your device. Keep up to date on our social media at linktree.com/CJSF Radio and learn more by visiting our website, cjsf.ca. Got a request? Text or call us at 778-782-CJSF. Hello. Welcome, everyone. Welcome to Slumber Party. I'm DJ Star.
And I'm DJ Coco. Thank you so much for joining us on this rainy Tuesday. Has it been rainy?
It's a little foggy up on the mountain, but very foggy. Beautiful earlier today. Mm-hmm. Had a very nice walk.
Oh, yeah. Today we had Clubs Day for the station, so I was there tabling a little bit, trying to rally more volunteers to come to CGSF.
Building an army.
Yes, but that's only our campus demographic. So also a reminder that anyone in the community, so you in the community, can join the radio station, start a show, meet some people, and we'll teach you everything. So just a little promotion for that. As usual, we have our topic and lots of music for this week. So stay tuned for that topic, and we will start off with the music. So this first one is by the artist Sahadi, and it's called Kismet. She's from Toronto. So enjoy.
Fading, my memories stained to me. What was it that went south? Keep coming back around to me.
Oh,
Gave it a shot in the open. Yes, I gave it a shot and I'm broken. Believed what I had for a moment. Believed what I had was the truth.
Office, SVSPO, offers confidential support, advice, and referrals to SFU and FIC community members, including students, staff, and faculty who have been impacted by sexual violence and misconduct. The SVSPO is a welcoming place where you can access support without judgment or assumptions. We work from a survivor-centered perspective, using an empowerment and trauma-informed approach that considers individual situations and perspectives. Please reach out. Services are located at the Diamond Alumni Center, room 014 on the lower level. Please reach out by email at sv-support@sfu.ca. That was sv-support@sfu.ca.
Welcome, welcome back. This is CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby Community Radio from Simon Fraser University. I'm DJ Coco.
And I'm DJ Star.
And you are tuning into Slumber Party. So just going to introduce the last couple songs you just heard. So that last one you just heard was by Claudia Bouvet. Song name was The Meaning to Us from the album Diary for the Lonely Hearts Deluxe. The one right before that was Naive by Soft Cult from the album When a Flower Doesn't Grow. And that one is cool. I believe they're from Alberta, and it's like a DIY Riot Girl inspired type band. And then I already introduced the very first one, the first song that I played, but I feel like I want to give a little more background on them. So the first one you heard was by the artist Sahadi, and the song was Kismet. And the artist, she's from Toronto, and she is from Kosovo, and she sings in Albanian. And she was trained as a classical pianist, but then she became an award-winning drummer at 14.
Whoa.
Yeah, and she won the competitions, like all the major competitions there. And then she switched to this kind of more indie pop, you know, I don't even know how to describe her style.
Maybe like dream pop?
Yes, and indie. R&B a little bit too. But she has a very unique style. I like her artistic flair, I guess. And she's 21 right now. So,
yikes.
What a
award-winning drummer at 14, publishing music 21.
I'm like, dang, okay.
A little behind.
So, go Sahadi. A little shout-out for that. And we are going to do a little bit of the topic right now. So, we're going to try to split it up into half so we don't bombard you with too much information at once.
Mm-hmm.
So today we'll be talking about the kind of more the principles of evolution is how I put it. It's not going to be that boring.
we will be talking today
about
the Darwinian theories.
Sorry, everyone's like tuning out now.
That's all I would like to say.
But it's more about you know, we think as humans, everything's about competition, capitalism, you know, fight for the death kind of thing. And there's not a lot of emphasis on the role of cooperation, you know, humans giving to each other or expecting, like, doing things that don't expect anything back. And so we're going to get into that. And it ties from this idea that I want to throw at you, and maybe you can implement yourself about the gift economy, which is this type of economy that is very implementable in a community scale that you can do and start yourself. And this is all inspired from this book that I was reading the past couple months. It's called The Service Berry by Robin Wall Kimmerer. So Robin is an indigenous scientist, and the book kind of talks about learning from indigenous wisdom and just the plant world in general and comparing it to, you know, our current human world that has all this competition and us fighting for resources and us fighting for prestige, things like that. And I thought it was also funny that I picked this book up at my hospital book sale. So it was one of those free book stands. And so it was like the book gave to me. And I guess maybe that's the point of they want to get across. So
the word service berry is so adorable. I just have to say.
Yeah, it is a great idea. The book cover, it's also beautiful. The artwork, that's the first thing that drew me to it, because it has this really, like, this watercolor picture of some berries and birds. And it just instantly represents the relationship that everything in nature has with each other. And that was, I'm a little bit of a vain person. I kind of go for the book cover. And so I went for the book cover.
Such a book by its cover. Yeah, me too.
Mm-hmm. But this is honestly a great book. I would definitely recommend checking this out. It's very short, too. It's very tiny. I think it's about 200, 300 pages. Very digestible. Nothing like PhD level at all. So just before we get into this, you know, gift economy and everything, I kind of just want to talk about this role of cooperation, because it ties into the book. So, you know, starting off, we all know about Charles Darwin and his theory of evolution, which is very, very backed by evidence. And these three concepts of evolution go by three principles, which is one, I believe it's versatility, which is the different kind of genes. Like, there has to be different kind of genes, and different people or these organisms have different advantages that are all different from each other. Second one is adaptation. So, you know, some of them have claws and they can climb the trees, which is really helpful. So they'll probably live and have some offspring. And then the third one is competition. And this is where it gets a little blurry, because we always thought this kind of black and white thinking from Darwin about that competition is, you know, like, we're all fighting for the same resources, you know, that the top man wins, you know, the tribe with the strongest man, and everyone's fighting each other for stuff, and it's more about individualism, you know, fight for yourself kind of thing.
I just want to add about that type of rhetoric around survival of the fittest is where I think that quote comes from, which is, yeah, it is a Darwin quote, but fitness is more defined as an organism that's most suitable to the environment. So it doesn't necessarily need to be the largest or the most aggressive. It just must have a lot of offspring to keep the line down. But we have definitely interpreted it to fit our society and kind of fit the status quo of capitalism and competition to say, like, oh yeah, survival of the fittest. If you don't, if you're not cutthroat, if you're not aggressive, then you're not going to be successful. But that is not necessarily what Darwin meant when he was originally saying that.
Yeah. So
just
there's
a note.
First of all, yeah, misconception of the actual word itself. Because, yeah, when we think competition, we're like, oh, well, it's just you versus me, or this person versus this person. You know, there's a winner, there's losers. But there's also that, and also the more hidden aspect of evolution in this particular bullet point for competition is that there's the role of cooperation, which is, as we've been saying before, about, you know, humans helping each other, or not even just humans, but animals that help each other within their own species, or even with other species as well. So for an example, like, I can do an example for other species. So, you know, like, why would an example, a bee help a flower? And so just the idea of pollination is an example of cooperation. And it's called when species help each other, symbiosis. And so, you know, the bee gets the energy, the nectar from the flower, and then the bee pollinates the flower, so it helps the flower, and the bee gets fed. So that's one idea of cooperation, which we kind of undermine.
Yeah, and that also is a process that goes for pretty much most of nature, is that there needs to be some aspect of symbiosis to continue having a sustained ecosystem. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's like everything is connected. You know, the trees need the insects in the ground to help fertilize, you know, it with the air as well. It's just all connected together to result in an end product, which the book particularly talks about, you know, the end product of a berry, because it's called the surface berry, which we pick and eat, but we just see the fruits of it, but we don't see the entire process of the ecosystem to make that berry for us. And, you know, even just the concepts of berries, it's like, you know, why is nature just giving us something for free kind of thing? It's like, we didn't do anything to deserve this. And so that's kind of, you know, as I said, the idea of the book and this role of cooperation, which is, there is research on it, lots of research on it, but I think it's still a bit unclear on what balance of competition versus cooperation, because personally, I don't think we can't just have just cooperation or just competition. You know, there's got to be some balance.
Yeah. And there is, when talking about helping one another in nature, it does seem like it is necessary, but for humans, I think it's, you know, a bit more of a complicated topic, I guess I would say, because there are many different theories and reasons why we would help one another, and a lot of them could be perceived as selfish. And especially in evolution, there's this whole idea of the selfish gene, which basically means you'll do whatever you can to continue your genetic material passing on through the generations. So just helping those in your family or helping those who might help you back is the idea of the selfish gene. But then there's also a lot of psychological reasons as well. Could be, you know, making yourself feel better about yourself, which is boosting your self-esteem, mm-hmm. aligning with your core values, fulfilling a role or responsibility. You know, there's also empathy, which is an interesting one, because what is the evolutionary purpose of empathy, and why does it drive us to want to help people when we don't really think that we're going to get something back from that person? Like, we can just see ourselves in them.
Yeah. It's tricky. It's like, why do we do some things?
Yeah. So, you know, it's a bit disputed, and everyone has their own reasons, and they might not be even conscious reasons of why we do certain things, but.
Yeah. Cause even spiritually, like, some people believe in bad karma, good karma, and not even people who are really into the idea, but maybe in the back of their mind, they think about, you know, it's good karma if I do this action, mm-hmm. even though they're not trying to think about it. So, you know, will we ever know if anyone does anything out the good of their heart?
Yeah, like, doesn't there always have to be something in it for them, even if it's not malicious, even if it's not sinister? Like, what's in it for me? How can I, you know, get the most out of this person? But even friendship, there is a certain amount of mutual respect and care for one another, and if that's not there, and if it's only one-sided, then a lot of friendships won't continue. Mm-hmm. So even in nature, like, there's all these interspecies friendships I see on, like, I don't know, when I was a kid, I'd be like, oh, the panda bear and the little dog are, like, best friends. But then they also have reasons for being friends, like stress relief, mutually shared protection, like those kinds of things. There's always seems to be a reason, and not necessarily like that's a bad thing, but I guess I just wanted to point out that it needs to be mutual in some way.
I think maybe nature or natural selection has made us more empathetic, because we wouldn't know ourselves about the benefits of being kind to someone, but even just making us have the chemicals to make us feel good after doing something to help our community that will eventually help us back, will help produce more offspring, because, you know, we are still not thinking that we are aware of it overall. I don't know how to explain
this. So it's kind
this.
Of like empathy facilitates reciprocity in a way. Like, empathy mm-hmm. helps along the process of that mutuality.
Yeah, it's kind of tricky to explain. I'm trying to think, like, because for cooperation, like, we are trying to do something good. And, you know, maybe like, we know that it's a good action. I don't even know what I'm trying to say here. We know
that's
that
complicated.
It's a good, yeah, we know that it's a good action, but I don't think that we think too deeply about, like, karma and about, you know, I will eventually get this back. Like, you know, we will, if we study it from an outside perspective, yes, the person will probably get something back in the future, but maybe that person in the moment doesn't care. And so doesn't that cancel out everything?
But a lot of times when someone has been helping me and I'm a stranger to them, they'll tell me, like, oh, you know, someone helped me a long time ago when I didn't know anyone. And if I help you, I'm, like, continuing the cycle, and, like, I'll be helped one day again, too.
But what about the people who just helped?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what their intentions are, but there is some process of thinking about, like, this cycle of, you know, helping one another. And that's good. I think that's not necessarily a bad thing to think about, that someone in the past helped you, they didn't know you. You can help a stranger as well, and then maybe they'll help someone else.
Yeah, I think it is a little inherently selfish, but it's way better than what our current system
is,
which we'll get into now. Yeah. Because right now, our current world, as we know, we all live in it, that we have a lot of emphasis on, you know, market exchange. We go to the store, we give money, they give us an item back. It's a lot of capitalism, a lot of small amount of companies that own a lot of things and all the things that we buy and do. And we have this exchange, which it is said to be from, you know, the limited resources, which is a component of competition in evolution, because, you know, we don't have everything in the world for everyone. It is tricky because it's like thinking about the obesity crisis and things, and some people have too much of something.
Got a little too much junk in the trunk.
Yeah, a little bit too much, but... But then it's like, with climate change and everything, we are dwindling our supplies. And so I wonder if this cooperation competition thing the scale will be imbalanced even further the more we get through life.
Yeah, because it is also, capitalism is ultimately about accumulation. And that kind of mindset will lead to greed, and with greed, like, there's never really enough. And combining that with the principle of needing to have ownership over everything, like land, people, objects, like houses, like everything we think we can own, even though it is, you know, kind of a construct anyways, like there's no way we can actually own the land that we're on.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads to a lot of attachment to material items. But at the same time, it's so strange. Just thinking about it now, like, we have a lot of attachment to the material world, but then we're also so quick to throw away and discard to make room for something new or trendy. So that's also, I guess, part of the consumption aspect of capitalism.
Yeah, so it's kind of this false idea of limited resources because it's like... We're just so greedy. We just want everything for ourselves, and I think you talked about this before, that people would rather not lose something over getting something.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, the scarcity mindset of needing to prepare yourself, that there's never going to be enough. And that makes gift giving, and we'll get into the gift giving or the gift economy more later, but I think it makes the act of giving a gift that much more difficult because of the system that's in place that makes us so emotionally attached to these things that we own, and the competition, and there's a lot of different factors that play into that.
Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think competition will ever go away, you know, in nature and in human greed, but I think with this incorporating this gift economy, which is kind of goes off the principles of cooperation, it is possible and it is needed, because it can fight, you know, our very capitalistic human greed and kind of form our mindset that, you know, we don't really need a Sheen Hall, or we don't really need four houses kind of thing, that it's just too much and too much surplus.
And another, just one last aspect of the framework, I guess, that makes up our current world is that natural resources are seen as commodities. Like, they are separated from their intrinsic value as part of our ecology and our environment, and they are instead given a monetary value as something to own and to sell. And I think that's also a big issue with what we have going on right now, is seeing everything pretty much as a commodity, even if it's just part of our natural world. And we should be, you know, making ourselves more equal and living with it instead of using it to exploit it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's more of a cycle than a, you know, straight line to the product and the consumer kind of thing. But this does tie a lot into our episode about indigenous ties with the land, because this book that quoting from is from an indigenous scientist. So it uses this indigenous wisdom that, you know, the land is not a commodity. They believe that the land is everything, like it's life itself. It hosts, like, you know, the salmon people who give up, who are humans who become salmon and they give up their flesh kind of thing. And it's this whole world. And with our very capitalistic society that we've made, it has gone against that. And so it is good to hear a new perspective.
Definitely. It's very refreshing, I would say. And also, this was said so long ago, but I'm just kind of clicking it now, is that I think obesity is not necessarily like too much of something, but rather,
yeah,
rather like too little of something in a way, because obesity kind of comes from poverty and not having enough money to feed yourself with the nutrients that are available, and also being overworked. So yeah, I just wanted to say that I just was thinking about it. Like,
obesity is a disease as well.
Obesity is like a very complex subject
and genetic too.
The reasons why.
But that's a whole nother story.
I feel like I regret the junk in the trunk comment.
It was needed. We needed that.
So sorry.
No, honestly, we got a good conversation, has all bullet points in them.
Yeah.
But I think that will wrap up our first little part to hype you up for the gift economy, which will tell you how it works, what to do, and how it ties back into this kind of foundation of cooperation. But before we do that, we're going to go back to the music for a little bit. So this next one is called Call You Back by the band Tops, and it's from the album Bury the King. So enjoy.
Good morning, it's Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1 in Burnaby. We just danced our way awake with Soul Mikasa.
Yeah, I'm a young black man who uses art to champion and celebrate blackness, as well as creating art that showcases black men as comprehensive, emotionally intelligent human beings.
Right now, we are going to hear a spoken word rap piece by Slam Poetry winner JB, the First Lady. That is Lady Johnny Proby singing Don't Quit, and here at Speak Up, we do not quit. Love, laughter, argument, and encouragement. The words are too few for the essence of you. And the show is just one of the ways that you can take feelings of pain and transform them to love and recognition. Today, we're exploring senior issues through digital media and the creative arts. My guests are Leslie Riemann, the director of the 411 Center, and Joel Flynn from Podstream. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, welcoming you to the Friday Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon What You've Heard show. We have conversations about social issues, culture, and creative arts events, potent samplings about special months like Health Month, Black History Month, Women's Month, Nutrition Month, and more. See you Friday at 10 a.m.
Welcome back. This is CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. I'm DJ Star.
And I'm DJ Coco.
And you're tuning in to Slumber Party. Woo-hoo. We're going to continue our conversation that we were having right before that break. We only played one song, but yeah, we're just too excited.
Too hyped up here. So yeah, back to the topic.
Wait. What was that song though?
Oh yeah, we gotta. We only did one song.
Okay,
I already said it. We'll do it one more time. That song was called "Call You Back" by the band Tops from the album "Bury the Key."
Bad.
But yeah, back to the topic. So if you left briefly, we'll just reiterate what just went down a song ago. So we were talking about you know, the role. Kind of more the going briefly over the rules of evolution, kind of the misconceptions that we have about them, and how this ties into, you know, cooperation, and, you know, why do humans just help each other instead of this very competition economy that we're right now in. And it's tying with this book from the indigenous science author, Robin Wall Kimmerer, called The Service Berry. So great book. Go check it out if you'd like. Very, very short book too. So don't have to take too long for that. But we're going to go into the second part now, which is talking about the book's idea, which is incorporating the gift economy, which is a component of cooperation in evolution. So as I said, this is the book's main idea. And it goes like, let's pretty much, the gift economy is giving gifts, easily said.
Boom.
Set and done. But it's like, you know, when you go to the store, you pay for something and you buy it. But with the gift economy, as it says in the name, you give something without expecting anything in return. And this is a great idea, and it comes from this perspective, from the author, the indigenous side. So, you know, you can think about the indigenous potlatches, which were these big celebrations that they had and were also banned because it didn't, you know, fit in with the European standard. It's like, they were like, why are you giving stuff to each other and not selling it?
And at the same time that colonizers banned the potlatches and banned indigenous people from producing their own art or doing anything cultural, they were taking those same items, cultural items, and putting them in museums. Yeah. So, just so y'all know.
So, yeah, we took that away. But it comes from this idea of just giving. And, you know, at the potlatch, you give things to other people for special ceremonies and et cetera.
And I think part of the idea of potlatches, I don't think this is, you know, universal for all indigenous peoples, but giving the gift is also, or I think accepting the gift is more of a recognition that you witnessed the events that happened at the potlatch. And it's about like witnessing one another, and yeah, just being there and receiving the gift is part of that experience.
Mm-hmm. And not even just the potlatches too. I thought this was really interesting, but for I didn't know this either, that for birthdays I'm not sure if it's every culture for in every indigenous clan, but I know that for birthdays, that instead of the person getting a bunch of gifts, this is the time that they give gifts to other people.
Oh,
yeah.
I kind of like that, actually.
I know. I heard that. I'm like, okay. I can go with that. I'd be broke, but I can do that.
Mm-hmm. That's actually really sweet.
It's so sweet.
Because there's no day. I guess Christmas is when you give it to everyone.
Yeah.
But it's not. It doesn't have the same effect.
Feeling. Yeah, because it's like, it's like expected. But when it's random, or I guess maybe when you do the birthdays, it's also expected by a certain point to give. But I think that it is nice, especially that it is not common at all in our culture, in Western culture, to give to others on your birthday. So I thought that was great. I don't know why I have never. It's so simple, too. It's such a simple idea. And it's like, oh, just do it the other way.
Ooh,
I know.
That's cool. That's pretty cool.
So, yeah, if you enjoy that too, maybe check that out. Maybe give some stuff on your birthday.
And Service Berry, I was also curious what this plant was, because the whole book is named after the Service Berry. And I looked into it a bit. And it's an example of ecological reciprocity. So it does a bunch of things for the ecosystem other than just bear fruit. it hosts like pollen for bees. It also has butterfly larvae spots to like keep that those generations going. Gives berry eating birds food, and it's just really supposed to represent the principles of a gift economy, which are generosity and care. And yeah, it's really interesting to see these things as also gifts from nature, like the just resources like water, berries, animals, fish, all of these different things. And I think it can go even further to say that maybe perhaps even beauty is a gift from nature. And that it sounds a bit, you know,
interesting, yeah,
religious or spiritual, but just thinking about
it's like a butterfly.
Rainbows or something, yeah. Or, you know, all these different things, waterfalls. Like, they're all so cheesy. I feel like I'm like making little rainbows, butterflies, and unicorns. But just, you know what I mean? Like, there's so many different things that nature provides us with that are not just something to eat or drink, that are bountiful and, you know, amazing. So, yeah.
And it's all for free.
Yeah.
You can just look at a waterfall and look at a rainbow.
It should be.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are not making it free, like charging to access that land because they own it. But in theory, yeah, it is. It should be free.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, okay.
Like, no one can own nature.
Go random on. Example, like the gross grind. Man, that thing is expensive getting down. Like, gosh, like 40 bucks? No way. Take my leg.
No.
Okay. But yeah, I guess they put some stairs up a mountain, then they called it their mountain.
Yeah, or resorts, you know, buying up beaches.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't know what it's actually you can't actually own a beach at all. It's in any part of the world. You have you can buy the access to the beach though, and so you can cut all points off. But I mean, if someone's on your beach, it's technically not illegal because you can't own the beach.
That's kind of nice to know.
Yeah.
There's definitely a loophole to that. Like
there's definitely
a
loophole. Oh yeah, like these all-inclusives in Mexico, they've got people getting you off there once ever you touch their land. But yeah, back to this. So, you know, in our society, I don't think it is not possible for everything to be free. I'll just say that, because there must be some sort of system we need to have, in my opinion, where we have this, you know, giving or selling an item and we take it. But I think we should definitely incorporate more of this gift idea and more of this giving without, you know, in a way that to help your community and not expect anything and just lift the people around you. I mean, like, for example, our libraries are more of a forced, they're more of a forced idea of this gift economy because our taxes pay for it. So our government makes us pay for the libraries, but man, libraries are amazing.
Yeah, I love I saw that note and I was, yes, libraries.
Oh my gosh. You know, there's so many things you can do, and you can just get a book for free and then give it back.
Yes.
Wow.
That's a beautiful world we live in.
They also have not even just the government things, but we have people doing these little free libraries you might have seen. So these are these built-in cases, usually around neighborhoods and such, where people put their books in. You can take a book, leave a book, etc. But it's so beautiful. Like whenever I see one, I almost feel a tear going down my face.
It's so nice. And yeah, with the system of exchange, what was written in this book is that wealth is not necessarily defined as having a lot of money or assets, but it's having enough to share. So I think a lot of us, you know, have enough to share and beyond, but we just don't. And they kind of talk about like redistribution. And yeah, like if you have a surplus, why not share?
Why
save it up for something? Like, you might not even ever use all those things.
It's like, yeah, you can hoard it up and maybe you can get a more expensive item, or you can make a bigger project with your time, or et cetera. But that's not going to bring you more happiness at all. Like, the point is just to be happy, and by hoarding and by buying all these things that you think will make you happy is not the principle of life, I don't think one should follow.
And the example was like, oh, you can store food in your cupboard, or you could store it in your friend's belly.
Okay,
that's kind of cool, because you're also living, I guess, in the present more in a way too, by practicing that.
Yeah, that is true. You don't have to think. So that is the idea of the gift economy, so giving things. And as well, back to the wealth thing, this giving gift economy is not just about, you know, something that you can buy. So, you know, you could give a pair of mittens to a friend kind of thing, which you bought. But you can also, you know, give your time, or you can repair something for someone, and et cetera. It goes way beyond that. And, you know, even just sitting down, having a conversation with your neighbor about if they're going through a troubled time is an act of the gift economy. And it's giving up your time that you could have used for something that could have benefited you, which is not, I mean, you can do it, but it would make you and your community more fulfilled.
Yeah, and I think this would pretty much only work if everyone or most people in the community are practicing this. Because if you're the only one who's, you know, gift giving, it might start and inspire people to do so, but you also don't want to get drained out of all of your resources, because, you know, this economy is still based on ecological economies where, you know, everyone is playing their part. So it seems like a really interesting idea, but I'm wondering if it's too idealistic, like if it's possible.
That was part of the note I put down, and what the author also mentioned is that this is usually not very implementable in large cities or a community that is larger than a town. I think that personally, like doing this in a neighborhood, even just starting as one person is better than doing nothing and sparking something, because there will always be, if you live in a neighborhood that is somewhat connected, there's always a chance to start something like this. And it might as well, it just bonds your community together and makes you stronger socially with everyone, your neighbors around you. I'd also think, like, you know, in those storybooks, like the isolated towns, but not even just storybooks, but like if you live out in Alberta somewhere in a small town, or somewhere that's smaller population, this is possible. But yeah, there was the issue that this could not really be implemented in a bigger city, even just like, you know, Richmond, for example. There's no way.
It is definitely hard to see it like, you know, necessarily combating capitalism. I know like that's not the purpose, is to defeat capitalism or anything, but it is, I guess, a way for us to have more meaningful and fulfilling lives under capitalism and trying to, you know, fight it in our own way.
That's why I think I like this book, because the aim of the book wasn't directly to fight capitalism. It was just more about embracing nature, but it had that side effect where it does combat capitalism. And I think that's great. And it doesn't really throw it at your face kind of way, so it's more digestible for the masses. As well, even just saying like, oh, combat capitalism, people are like, oh, you know. But then you say like, oh, you know, go bake a pie for your neighbor. And people are like, okay, I can do that.
Yeah, it's like taking the steps to do community building before organizing.
I think building a community is a form of fighting capitalism.
Yeah, definitely.
So this good book.
Good great book. Great book.
Read this book.
Read like, this Service Berry book.
Oh, my gosh. Like, I'm telling you. I've read a lot of books. I was a bookworm. We were both bookworms and still are growing up. And I think this is one of the books that I'm so glad that I've read and just randomly picked up, because it's one of those things that really does change your look on life. And I want to give more gifts. I just want to...
Yeah, that would be nice.
Yeah, just like randomly. Because I remember the one time someone did that for me and I was like, wow, I'm never going to forget that.
Yeah, no, definitely. One time I told my friend she was wearing a pin that was a lizard. I was like, oh my gosh, I love your pin. And she's like, take it. Like, you can just have it. Oh, wow. So I think she was doing the gift economy. Had given me like little knitted things. Yeah. And, you know,
it's amazing. It's
so special.
Makes you feel special. Makes
Shout
also
out
the person.
Evelina.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
It's amazing. Anyway, we're just hyping it up. But
I'm just so happy right now.
I know. Makes
thinking
you feel
about
so happy too.
The future, the possibilities.
And with this as well, you know, there's benefits. Other than, you know, social connection, making you feel happy, it's only when you have this autonomy of giving. Like, if someone forces you to give something, you're like, ugh. But if you go,
that's
out
why
your
Christmas
way,
is kind of like,
yeah, Christmas is like, it's like thanks. It's more of an exchange,
yeah, true.
Kind of thing. But with this, you know, you give that gift with autonomy, and there's spiritual benefits as well, you know, good karma. And it's sustainable. I feel like, in a way, if someone gives you a good pair of mittens, you're going to wear those mittens. I mean, for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll value it more. And you'll see the value in items more rather than something that's more transactional, like, you know, a pair of $10 mittens from the store you can just buy, which thousands are produced the exact same way. But it kind of makes you think more about the item that you're given.
Yeah, there are tons of benefits for sure. Mm-hmm. But I think we do need to start wrapping up this conversation and just, you know, rattle off some ways to start a gift economy because, you know, that'd be nice for everyone.
Mm-hmm. So we already mentioned a couple points about that. So just starting with your neighborhood, you know, your next door neighbor, your apartment building. Apartment building is also a great way to live in a strata. Just go knock on your neighbor's door. Because most of the time, we don't even talk to our neighbors, really. And so go knock on the door. You can be like, oh, I've been knitting this, or I made some cookies or something. Here, take mm-hmm. them. And so you build a relationship. Makes you feel good. It builds your community because maybe they'll do the same thing. And it can be a domino effect. And, of course, not everyone is going to take it and make an impact, but there will be someone who does it and it will be a ripple effect.
For sure. Less attachment to material items, giving away what you don't need, practicing sharing, all of these things are good to start a gift economy.
But we do have to go.
We do have to go. Wrapping it up now.
So
thank you all for listening.
Speed wrap up.
Mm-hmm. Next up is our friend Lynn's open mic. Little shoegaze probably. And then
I believe it was Emo cowboy.
Shoegaze.
I got it wrong.
Okay.
I'm getting the mouth that it's wrong, but somewhat like that, but very special episode.
Midwest emo shoegaze.
Okay.
Coming up next, guys. So
it is live. It has been researched very thoroughly today, so I would definitely stay tuned.
Get excited.
Strap in. But after that, we have Bitcoover with our music coordinator, Connor, at 8 p.m., usually 2-hour special, amazing show as well. So stick around for the next while. But we're going to end off with a couple extra songs. So what do we have? We have the next one, It's All One by The Dirty Sample. So this is... I like this song. I like this whole album. A lot of sampling. So it's kind of got this very grimy feel to it. But it's nice. So enjoy.
Enjoy.
See you next week.
You get all.